Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Cates, joined by my other host, Chris Leppert. How you doing, bud?
What's up, dude? Doing good. You?
I'm doing well. And we are joined today by Greg Mayhair of Meadow Creek Mounts. Greg, how's it going?
It's going great. It's a busy time of year for me. So getting ready for turkey season and shipping a ton of orders out every day and trying to go kill a turkey this weekend. So.
Oh man, gosh, that's the dream right now.
Florida?
Yep.
Oh man.
Jelly.
Yeah. It's I'm glad you're here because this is our inaugural turkey month that we've kind of decided to do where we cover people, places, and things that are integral to the turkey hunting world and all things that, but You know, Chris, maybe you can kind of lead into a little bit more of how you and Greg met and, you know, go into a little bit of that.
Yeah. So I met Greg down at deer camp in Alabama. He refused to share any deer pins with me and let me go sit in his tree. we got to share camp together.
Southern guy from Ohio wouldn't go try any of the spots. So.
we kept Jacob's wonderful fire going with a fan and dined on delicious cheddar jalapeno hot dogs from Weaver's. But met Greg, got to hang out with him and share a few nights at camp and chat about deer. And turns out he was the guy who owned the company I've heard about for a little while now from Aaron Satterfield. So Greg, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us how you got into the outdoors and then maybe lead into how you got into turkey hunting.
Okay. So yeah, I'm Greg Mayhair. I'm the owner of Meadow Creek Mounts, as he mentioned. Started out hunting when I was a kid, but pretty much only deer, squirrels, you know, whatever. I'd take a 22 and just go back when you could roam through the woods and no one really cared. Started out bow hunting when I was 10 or 11 and then killed my first couple deer with a bow the second year. I think I was 12. So never really got into turkey hunting until I was in college. It was just not something that we really had anywhere to go. Most of our spots just had deer. I'm sure there were a few turkeys around, but no one that I knew that I hunted with really turkey hunted. My friend did, but we never really hunted together growing up. So when I went to Clemson for engineering and started hunting around Clemson, some of the public land around there, good luck going there now because there are about three times as many students as when I was there. So I don't even go back. No, it's an hour away. I'm sure there's some turkeys around, so I'm not going to say there's not, but yeah, that's how I started on the public land right there in Clemson and, killed the first turkey the first time I went. It was a Jake, but it was a fun morning. It was, we had a gobbler that was about 60 or 70 yards away and just never would commit. And the first redhead that got into range got it. So I was one of the fortunate people to kill one on their first hunt. I know a lot of people struggle, but I had a good good person to go with that I learned a lot from. So that's pretty much it, how I got into to hunting. Like I said, I deer hunted mainly until then. So
okay,
that's now I love turkey hunting way more than anything else though. So, and I think Chris, based on what he's, unless he was just mad about not seeing any deer in Alabama, I think he kind of feels the same way. So
exactly the same way. My love for deer hunting has increased in the past couple years with learning pretty much a completely new way to hunt, but this time of year is second to nothing.
Nothing
for me. And I think elk could match that, but the thing is we can go hunt turkeys together tomorrow if we want. You can't do that with elk. And if we mess up on a turkey, we can go strike another one. If you mess up on an elk, that's different, especially being a flatland out-of-stater. So
the elk, man, when if you mess up on them, they don't stop till they've gone miles up over a ridge. They haven't even started to breathe hard, and you start up that ridge. And it's all, that's, yeah, you're right.
Seven steps. You're like, yeah. So tell us a little bit about your elk hunt before we dive into some turkeys. By the way, you killed a slammer right there.
That's a nice elk on your background.
Yeah, it was a surprise that I've been going for a while now, close to 20 years, but not every year, it's getting to where I guess I actually texted Chris a week or two ago. It looks like Colorado might not be over the counter anymore. Even all the point creep's getting bad enough. Looks like it's going to get worse. No telling what happens when that all shakes out. But yeah, public land opening morning with a bow. So it was a surprise to see one that big, but just kind of feeding in a creek. Not really rut time yet, and way bigger than any that I've ever seen. So I've killed a handful of cows and a small bull or two before. So to kill one like that on opening day was a nice relaxing 10 days after that. Usually it's stressing until the very end and trying to get that last hunt in before you have to pack your bow up. So it was relaxing this year.
Do you feel like there was anything you did or focused on or anything that helped you? Or was it just blind luck or what?
Yeah, not really. We've kind of been going to a few areas for years and just kind of knew the area. And like I said, it was just feeding in a creek. It was more or less heard them from about 200 yards away, just walking, and snuck up there. That's pretty much it. I wish I could say it was an exciting bugling man to 15 yards screaming in my face, but that isn't how it was.
Wow.
And we've talked about, I think I have 7 deer points, but they've cut 25 or 35% off of the non-resident. So I was really excited about drawing a deer tag. So it might be another year or two on that, because I think that, so I've never even deer hunted in Colorado, but I think that all the over the counter for the antlered is gone for archery. I don't believe
think
you can get it
for mule deer. There's no over the counter
anywhere for over the counter. So yeah, just banking those points and might have to just reel back to a different unit. So we'll see.
Yeah. Really, I think the only place that's over the counter for the most part is really Nebraska, and everybody gets all excited, and then you go to Nebraska and you're like, oh, there's not mule deer everywhere. They actually claim they have a big population, but I think the majority of them are on private. When we went out there, we went, pretty far west, and we're on a WMA, and I was about 150 yards off from being able to kill a giant. They're the most patternable thing I've ever seen in my life. Huge, probably, I don't know, they were probably 60s, 70s bucks, roughly, in full velvet, by the way. The little one's like 135, 140, and I would have been tickled with him, and they dwarfed him, but they were on the private, and you can't, like, there is no like gray area or anything. Those ranchers are serious. It's not some, like some of the states where you can, hunt technically I guess they call it trespass, legally.
Legal trespass,
if it's not posted or whatever. So, yeah, I had to look at some Giants just walking around, which really blew. It's not like you're going to call them in. So, but, yeah.
I've actually seen more whitetails out in Nebraska than mule deer anyway. So we found found a huge deadhead last year, probably that's probably high 120s, low 130s, which is big for me living in South Carolina, but just a bit, just kind of a smaller frame, but a lot of mass 10 point. So
yeah. Yeah. Go on an out of state hunt and kill a 20s or 30s deer.
Yeah.
Not terrible, really.
No, not in the least.
We get a lot of these guys in the Midwest that like get all big headed and they're like, oh, well, I'd pass that. And I'm like, have you hunted out of state on public land before? Like, this isn't Mamaw's farm. there's no corn or it's tough. You're probably going to get your ass kicked. See Chris Leppert, Alabama, January.
Hey, everybody did. So.
Yeah. It's tough, man. And it's funny because, I mean, I've been to Nebraska. I've been to Kentucky. I've been to Indiana, Tennessee. Tennessee, I thought was going to be a joke, a rifle on huge bean fields. I was laughing like for a week, and I didn't see a deer. I didn't even jump a deer. It was crazy, but it was also hell on earth. So, Greg, what led you into creating your company, Meadow Creek Mounts? And tell us a little bit about it, if you would.
Okay, so I guess I'll start with what it is. So we make a red dot mount that clamps onto the rib of a shotgun. And I just happened to have mine right here beside me because I thought you might ask. I actually went and I had to sign it in today because since I'm leaving Friday to go to Florida. So it just clamps onto the rib so you don't have to drill, you know, put the holes back here to drill and tap. So that's the gist of what it is. So, you know, when I about, let's see, 24 in probably 2018, 2017, I had a gun that I needed to put a red dot on. Didn't really want to drill it. Ended up drilling it myself. Thought there's got to be a better way because I was seeing people asking on Facebook every day how to put a red dot on my shotgun. What do I do? being an engineer, I looked at the rib and I was like, you know, I really don't see any reason why you can't put one right there. You know, we might put it on there and the rib might fall off in three shots. Who knows? Well, little 870, we'll find out. So I started testing on 870 and a TriStar Raptor, which, by the way, for the price of those guns, I don't think you'll find anything that shoots better than the Vipers, the Raptors, so, but that's beside the point. So started out on those guns and just tested for a couple of years, and it's just grown from there. That's really what led me to it, though. I saw I heard other people asking about the problem that I had as well, and just knew there had to be a simple way to fix it with no modification to the gun. So did that and tested it for a couple of years before we released it in Nashville, the big show in 2020, and kind of have a more universal model now that fits pretty much everything instead of having gun specific mounts. It's crazy. It's a joy to hunt with something like that, you know, knowing that I designed it and make them and put it on the gun and just use it. It's fun. It's kind of like the ammo. I was been loading my own ammo for longer, but that's just as fun to have something like that on there too. So.
You do the TSS?
Yeah, I've been loading since probably 2012 or so.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Are you what gauge and shot size you prefer?
So 20 gauge. I haven't killed a turkey with a 12 gauge in probably 8 years. So 20 gauge. And then I really like nines. I've got some 8x9s loaded right now that I'm shooting. So they shoot good. The duplex loads always shoot better than straight for whatever reason, just the way I guess it's almost like two separate loads coming out.
Like at
the,
you know,
it's almost like it doesn't try to constrict it all. I mean, I'm sure there's way more science to it than that, but the duplex loads in everything I've ever shot have shot better than just a straight nine, 8x9 will be better.
Do you feel like the pattern is more forgiving in a duplex load?
Yeah, it can be. So, you know, I hear people ask about choke sizes a lot, and I've very few guns have I ever seen that are over choked with TSS. I know it does happen. I've seen it before. But that's one of the good things about it. You can open your choke up a little bit more and then get a little bit more forgiving pattern, you know, out in the a 20-inch mm-hmm. ring is what I like to have a lot of pellets out there. So if you can get 90% or so, 92% in that 20-inch circle, then you're doing pretty good.
How far do you generally shoot birds? What's your max range?
I mean, max range is further than you need to be shooting one, but I mean, most turkeys I kill are 25, 30 yards. I mean, I don't set up to try to have a long shot. I'm mostly hunting the woods. You're not going to find me on the edge of a field, most likely. I hate field birds. So yeah, mostly hardwoods and pines, 20, 25, 30 yards is what most of them are. But that's the cool thing about, you asked about forgiving, the pattern being forgiving with those duplexes. What I've seen is, allows you to open the choke up. Since they do shoot tighter, you can open it up and get more out of that hot core out into a bigger area. So
absolutely.
It's one of the big benefits of shooting them.
All right. I like it.
What are you what gun are you currently running?
So this is the Mossberg SA-20, which I just got. I've been hunting with an 870 because, I mean, it shot okay. It didn't shoot great, but I needed a little better pattern. And this gun's basically the same as the TriStar for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
And don't quote me on this. I believe they're made in the same factories in Turkey as both of them. So, it's Indian Creek choke, Burris Fast Fire 3 on my mount. I love a pistol grip. I got buddies that love them, buddies that hate them. If I'm turkey hunting, it's going to have a pistol grip on it.
I like a pistol grip on everything, man. That or a thumb hole, which pretty much turns it into a pistol grip. I love that.
What about your rifle? Do you have one on that new rifle?
Huh?
You have a pistol grip in?
Oh, yeah. Here.
It's pretty damn impressive.
I mean, I hated spending the money I did, but I pretty much had the option of buy two rifles or buy one really good rifle. So I went with the one really good one.
There you go. You only need one. I mean, we all have more than one, but yeah.
You can raise the cheek weld right there, and it's pretty neat.
So you don't need that big fancy case you were looking at last night. You get small.
Well, I want it to be able to hold two guns. So when I go to Texas, I want to take this rifle for hogs, and I want to take my shotgun, even though I'm going to try to bow hunt them. Everybody's talking about these Rios being easy. So I'm going to take my bow and at least maybe give it a shot, but to be clear, I'm not a bow snob. I would prefer to hunt them with a shotgun, but I feel like being on a private ranch with a proclaimed easiest turkey of them all, I'm thinking.
I made the mistake of, like I said, I was at Clemson. There's a lot of archery only. So the land is kind of, a lot of it you can only shotgun hunt for deer, or shotgun hunt for turkeys, but you can archery hunt for deer. But then some of it is archery for everything. So I got the bright idea after I only had like two turkeys under my belt, I was going to kill one with a bow. And yeah, that was a couple seasons. I mean, I didn't do it all season, but you know, when you're sitting there up against a tree and this is, I mean, I don't care what anybody else does. I don't like to hunt out of blind or decoys or anything like that. I like to be able to go. So I'm just sitting there up against the tree. Mm-hmm. Three gobblers come off a hardwood ridge and I'm sitting there like, all right, I can't do anything. You know, if I have my shotgun dead, but I can't draw back or anything. And they ended up going up and I circled them and same thing happened like 30 minutes later with the same group. And I was like, yeah, I don't think this bow hunting thing's for me. So
truth be told, I'll have my little stake blind, not a blind, just something to go, you know, 18 inches up or whatever, cover your legs up. But I'm going to ship my decoys down there. I run those DSDs when I can, generally on private. If I'm on public, I really don't feel safe with it. Plus, it's just, then it's going to kill the whole run and gun thing. So, we'll see what our scouting intel's like and everything. And, you know, day one, I'll know what to do after day one. If I don't kill one with a bow after day one, we're busting out the old 28 gauge.
Rios are fun. They're a different animal for sure. So.
It was actually hilarious when I made the posts about them. And I messaged some buddies, and from what everybody says, they like the higher decibel, super loud, high-pitched noises. Like, they'll gobble more at coyotes, people said, than like a crow call, which I'd assume they probably, I don't know what Texas is like, but I don't know what the crow population is down there, but I know they got a crap load of coyotes. And then people said, like, ditch the mouth calls, take a box call, or, you know, whatever, which probably won't do that, but I'll have a box call with me, or like a nail call.
Yeah, nail call and do it.
So this kind of leads into the next part, like what we wanted to talk about today is talking out-of-state turkeys and traveling to hunt turkeys. So Greg, what are you typically like taking with you on an out-of-state hunt? What do you look at in terms of if you say I'm going to pick a spot on the map and I'm going to go hunt birds? What are you typically looking for? What are you typically taking with you, depending upon where you're going?
Yeah. So, of course, the first thing to think about is, I end up flying a lot of places. I think Chris is flying for the first time, it sounds like, soon. So,
die tomorrow.
Yeah. So, think about that, get your gun case, get all that stuff figured out with the TSA locks versus not. I don't use TSA locks, but when I'm looking for a spot, I like to find big pieces of public, but what you find a lot of times is the birds are on the outskirts near private. I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. In fact, where I hunted in South Dakota a couple years ago, sitting there listening to turkeys gobble over on private, we're probably 200 or 300 yards off the line. And then you hear, like, that is not a natural sound. Get closer to the edge and you can look across the valley with binoculars and there's three strutters walking around a corn feeder. It's like, all right, what am I going to do over here? You know, so just know that, you know, the turkeys are like to be around the private, and that's where I've killed a lot of them on the public. So I like to make sure I've got water. I'll have a water bladder in my vest. So anything that you can think of that you might need, go ahead and pack it. I'm going to be going out west this year, probably living in a vehicle for 8 days. So I'll probably need to talk to Chris about, well, never mind. Chris showed up in Alabama with like a 10-man tent and a huge blow-up mattress. So I need a smaller sleep system for my western trip. So, like I said, I probably shouldn't ask Chris about that. I might be asking for advice. I've slept in vehicles, SUV, fold down by myself. I'm going to have someone with me this year, so we're probably just both going to sleep in tents. But as far as looking for places to go, I have a lot of buddies that I can depend on. So have a trust system, have a group of buddies that have been to one place and you're going to a different place in different states. If somebody shares a pen with you and you share it with somebody, that's probably not good. So find that group of guys that, like Chris knows exactly where I was hunting in Alabama for deer. Everybody that was in that group knows where everybody was. I doubt they would tell anybody. Have that for you with your turkey group. I've killed a lot of turkeys. I owe a lot of people turkeys here in South Carolina, I'm sure, that have pointed me in the right direction. I don't need a pin dropped on a turkey. I just, usually if I'm asking someone, it's kind of, hey, are there turkeys here? You know, you hate to go out of state and spend 2 or 3 days just trying to even find an area that has birds. So that's one of the major things that I like to have nailed down before I go.
Okay.
That's a big one for sure.
The word of the Lord. That's like, that's one of my biggest pet peeves is people not telling other people about spots, spot burning. I hate that.
Yep.
That's good advice.
I got a question. I got one question before we hop off that topic. So
As someone who flies a lot, and you transport gun, what is something that you feel like is really important that a lot of people miss or get held up at TSA or something along those lines? Is it typically locks? Is it keeping ammo separate or someone just throwing their box in there? Like, what are the things that you think of or like kind of the most important if you're going to be flying with your weapon?
Yeah. And Chris actually asked this on the forum yesterday and got all kind of different answers. So you're going to get two different answers to this. It's what is supposed to happen and whatever random TSA agent you get thinks is supposed to happen. So you're really not supposed to use TSA locks on the gun case. I've never used a TSA lock on a gun case, and I've never had an issue with my regular master locks. The only issue I've had is when TSA loses the locks. Another thing is if your gun case has two slots for locks, you have to use two locks. If it has four, you have to use four. So they don't want, I guess that in their mind, it's designed to be able to only be secured if all those locks are in place, where if you know you've only got two on a four lock case, then maybe you could get in the end of it. So, and that's another thing. I flew for 2 years with only three locks because TSA had lost one of mine on one of my most recent trips. They almost didn't let the gun go through since I only had three locks. And I was like, hey man, TSA lost it, even though it had been years. And guess what happened on that trip? Down to two locks. So I guess before my next one, I'll be going to get more. So typically the way it works with the gun case, when you get to check in, you're going to open it. Please make sure your gun's unloaded before you even leave the house. You don't want to be up there when they check it and it be loaded. I don't know what they would do, but I doubt it would be good. So what they'll do is typically they'll open it. They'll make sure it's unloaded. You'll sign a little paper saying that it's unloaded and they'll put it in there. I always leave mine unlocked and go with them down to the TSA check-in where they can send it through. Usually you just stand outside of the door for 5 minutes. Sometimes the agent will come out and say you're good to go. Sometimes they don't come back out and that means you're good to go. If they don't come out and get you, and they'll lock it up. So that the reason for not using the TSA locks is they don't want anyone to be able to get in it once it's through security. They don't want TSA, anyone handling it, to be able to use a TSA key and get into it.
Okay.
That's not to say that, I mean, I'm sure there's thousands of people that have flown with TSA locks on their gun case, but per their rules, you're not supposed to. So that's one of the major things. I think there used to be a thing with the ammo needing to be in a separate case. Mine always goes in my gun case.
Okay.
They say it needs to be in a factory box. So yeah, a lot of times if it's my hand loaded stuff, then I've got like a factory box for it, but a regular just plastic box has always been fine for me.
Okay.
So yeah, I've not had to put the ammo separate, but when you mentioned that, I think that used to be a thing. So that'll get you through security quickly.
I'm a little worried that I can't watch them lock it up. I was wondering how they were losing stuff and you didn't know. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. So like I said, I'll just take the lock and loop it on one of the, you know, just have it open and that, but how do they lose it? I mean, they walk 5 feet with it and it goes through the scanner. You think they open it and look and lock it and then run it through the scanner, or maybe they scan it and then lock it in case they need to see it again. It could be where the lock gets lost, but like, all right, you had four locks 30 seconds ago. Why do you have three now? Like, fun.
Right. They needed a lock for his shed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
What kind of vest are you running?
So I have two different styles. I have one that's lighter, less stuff. That's the Sitka vest. I know a lot of people hate the word Sitka, but man, I love that vest. It's awesome. I'm a first light guy and I love the Sitka vest. So I have like zero, I have like two other pieces of their gear, but and then the other is the grounded vest. If I want to carry more stuff, it's got more pockets, a bigger bag in the back, bird bag. So it just kind of depends on what I'm doing that. And I don't switch day to day, but kind of like a trip that I might know that I'm going to be hunting all day. I might opt for one that can hold more sandwiches and more water. I like a water bladder in the Sitka. The ground is bigger where I can put more water bottles in it, but keep a water bladder. But that, man, that Sitka vest is really well thought out for sure. You can get up and go without the seat hitting you on the legs. It's not like you got to flip it up. If you're going to walk a mile, yeah, you might want to cinch it down. But if you're going to get up and move 200 or 300 yards to a different tree, you can just go without worrying about a bunch of extra noise.
Nice.
I like it. I ordered that new Chief Upland vest, so we'll see. Hopefully it comes in relatively soon. I want to get everything dialed up. It's got a water bladder too, which I'm excited about.
Oh, it already has one in it.
Well, you can order, like you could order a coffee thermos holder that attaches to the side, which I did because I'm a coffee guy. And Rick and I went out the year before last, and I had a thermos of coffee, a travel mug in my turkey vest. And wouldn't you know that every ounce leaked out of there and just destroyed all kinds of stuff in my vest, man. It was rough.
I had a Stanley thermos with the, but there was a little gasket on the lid. So I went on a deer hunting trip, and when it got washed before I went, I didn't realize that the gasket didn't make it back on the lid. So I was like, man, I don't understand this thing. Why does it not? Like, I thought it was just a problem with the Stanley, but it wasn't. So I had the same thing happen with all my coffee.
Super, super frustrating.
That was a fun morning, Chris.
I'm trying to think of which morning was that.
That was the big bird where you whacked it at 70 yards.
76 yards. Yeah, we'll fuck around with mark it down, Rick. With a 12 or a 20 gauge.
20 gauge.
Boot, which trying to think here.
It's that one.
I'm kind of oriented weird. I should know just by the pose of the bird. It's kind of disappointing to myself.
That was a fun morning, though.
Yeah, that was a blast. So that bird came across a ridge top, and he was working his way away from me. And we'd already played games for 2 weeks with that sucker. And I was like, well, we're going to let her rip. And I shot and didn't see the bird. And I was like, oh, dude, you just wounded a turkey, you moron. And I went up there, and he's laying on his back, stone dead. And me and Rick were like, oh, God.
Yeah,
20-gauge nines. Okay.
Had no idea. He was hiding behind by a tree because I was supposed to be working my way down the field towards him. And I'm coming up over the hill, and then I see a head pop up. So I get my gun up, and by the time I get my sight lined up on him, I just hear boom, and then whack, and then I was like, the bird disappears. So we both come running, and he goes, did I kill that bird? Like, I have no idea, man. I think it could have flown off. And we're sitting there looking, and here it lays, this big black mass laying in the middle of a cattle pasture. As it was a game time too, because we were getting ready to leave.
Yeah, that was. Dude, that first year was tough on his farm. That was not as easy as I thought it would be. But also, like, we were learning it. And now, well, we'll just say the first year was tough. Last year was a bit unfair. It's a good thing Chris missed a time or two to give the birds an advantage. How many subspecies of birds have you taken, Greg?
So just three. I've never hunted Osceolas.
So you get your slam this year if you get one.
No, I'm not going to the south. So I'm going. I'm not going after them again. So I killed one last year up in the morning. One in Florida. That if you just showed the picture to people, they might tell you it's an Osceola. I'm not going to try to claim it because I was north of the line. But I'm not going to go fight all those people until I draw for something. So I'll just, even, I mean, the North Zone in Florida is bad enough. I know that the South Zone where the Osceolas are has probably got three times as many people. So, but yeah, I've just killed the Eastern Rios and Merriams. The Rios and Merriams are, and they're different. They walk. Those Merriams hit the ground. Rios are pretty much the same way. 8, 10, 12 miles a day. They're just going. So, and they are, so, you know, you watch turkey videos and you see people find roost trees. I've hardly ever found a roost tree in the Southeast. Every now and then you'll find one, but Rios and Merriams, they find roost trees. They'll roost in those big cottonwoods every night, same tree, 15, 20, 30 of them. And you know when you get under that tree. So yeah, that's what you need to, if you find them one day, that's probably where they'll be the next day, Chris, especially in Texas.
Giddy.
Yeah, they're not. So I hear people that say, oh, I hunted this turkey this day and then the next morning. But a lot of the studies, a lot of the GPS studies that were done showed that they, turkeys do have like roost sites or roost areas, but a lot of time it's a different bird.
Okay.
Which, I mean, could be the case with the Rios and Merriams too. But again, one roost tree, they can see it from a mile away and that's where they're going.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Was that study done by MSU Deer Labs?
Jesus.
I don't believe so.
Good stuff.
Get that.
How many states have you hunted and killed in?
Yeah, I think I've killed turkeys in like 12 states. I've probably hunted in 13 or 14. Last year I tried to pull off only had a morning in Massachusetts and it didn't work out. Had some turkeys that I'd found, and then trying to think of what other state I might have. Oh, Tennessee. Last year I went up for a morning. I was having some back issues. Walked about 6 or 7 miles and then laid in the bed of my truck trying to get my back straightened out and said, I can't do this. I got to go home. So I bought the annual license. So I'll get to go back. So I still have the license for it. But yeah, I hunted a lot of I've been out west a couple times to Colorado, hunted Kansas, Nebraska. Kansas was my first, what I call out of state, okay, which wasn't South Carolina or Georgia. My first 8 years or so of turkey hunting was just South Carolina, Georgia. My first trip was to Kansas. And it was, if there's a tree and a creek, there's a turkey in Kansas. So,
jeez.
Yeah, so I've done Kansas, Nebraska, of course, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and then New York, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine. Where else have I been? I think Ohio. So yeah, those are the states I've been to, hunted and killed turkeys. I get asked if I'm doing the 49 thing. Not really. I'm just casually doing it because you find states that you like to go back to. So there's really no sense.
Absolutely.
Oh, South Dakota as well. Forgot about South Dakota. South Dakota's fun too. You're driving through what looks like a wasteland and you turn off. I hunted an Indian reservation there. You turn off the road, you drive for like 2 miles through cow pastures, and then you get to the top of a ridge. And it's the same way. There's little ravines that the deer hang out in. That's where the turkeys hang out. You'll just sit there and you'll see them come out, and then they'll disappear into another ravine. Hour later or so, you see some more come out. So it's kind of the same way. You think you're in the, you think they're not there, but.
Man.
Wow. Eddie,
you can say pass on this question. Do you have a favorite state?
Maybe, honestly, even though the population isn't great, is maybe Colorado, just because of the scenery.
Okay.
One of the most beautiful place I've ever killed a turkey, and actually killed probably that turkey, that bear, and that elk within a couple miles of each other.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's great. It's fun to be there. So,
all right.
Just beautiful pictures and beautiful scenery.
Awesome.
Favorite subspecies?
Yeah, that's got to be Eastern. I know the others are just, they they act different, but an Eastern that's 50 yards away over a little knoll in hardwoods, there's nothing that, you know, you can't see them yet. There's nothing getting you more excited than that. But Rios and Merriams are fun just because they gobble a lot. They gobble all day. They kind of have a puny sounding gobble. Are you prepared for that yet? It's kind of a more whiny sounding. It's not thundering. And a lot of that probably has to do with the terrain as well.
Sure.
But yeah, it's got to be Easterns just because the challenge that they bring.
I will say, I could see where you'd pick any other bird due to scenery, you know, the layout of things. But I agree with you as far as Easterns go. And I haven't hunted another subspecies yet. This is only what I've heard from guys like yourself. But I do know that when you're sitting in open timber and you don't see him and he's, you know, 40, 50 yards away and he gobbles, it'll make your freaking heart drop into your butt.
Yep. It's every single time.
And if you've got like crazy reflexes like me, where you jump at even the slightest little difference in noise levels or something, man, it'll scare the hell out of you. What do you feel like's the easiest bird you've hunted?
I guess the Merriams. I mean, the Merriams and Rios are kind of so similar. You know, they'll come from a mile or two away across big valleys, like some of the ones I've killed in, like the one I killed in Colorado and some of the ones I've killed like South Dakota. They might be all the way on another mountain gobbling and you just hear them coming closer. They're just going down. They'll cross a creek at the bottom. I mean, they might drop 800 feet in elevation and come up. Like that Colorado turkey, I killed that at like 9,500 feet. So, I mean, you're up. Yes. We were up in the mountains and they just go right across. It's not like, I mean, I won't say it's easy. It's not like they just come around right to you, but if they're gobbling and responding, you can pretty much, you stand a good chance of killing them. And they're just so responsive, you know. Eastern, you might hunt till 8 or 8:30 and they, you know, they shut down, quit gobbling. And those birds out there, if they'll give you a response, you can usually figure out something to get closer or some way to get to where they're headed to.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know why they walk, they move so much. I mean, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Like an Eastern, and you're right. Like there's plenty of them that gobble on the roost and shut up when they fly down and won't say a peep. And I know cognitively they're not making that decision. So yeah. Why? It's annoying. What state you think you're going to hit this year?
So, of course, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. And then since I have my Tennessee license already, I'm going to go to Tennessee. Also, when we on the Alabama deer hunt, I went ahead and bought the annual. So same. Might slip over to Alabama at some point. And then I'm going to most likely going to hunt in Colorado. We usually go for fun and hope there's turkeys around. So, I mean, while we're there, might as well just get the tag, go do it.
Nice.
It's kind of a, we've only kind of found turkeys in one spot and have driven around lots of miles to find others. It hasn't really worked out. So if they're not in that spot this year, it might just be a waste of time. But I'm also going to go to Washington, Idaho, not really, maybe Oregon and maybe Indiana. I don't know. A lot of big plans that I hope come true. Definitely the Western stuff will happen. And then the Southeast stuff. So
man,
it should be a big season for sure.
I've heard Oregon, is it Oregon or Washington? One of the two of them is just like plumb loaded with birds. Like they've got like a three bird limit or something during their spring season.
Yeah. I haven't been out there. And I was out there last summer. Well, I was in Washington last summer. Didn't really see any turkeys, but I wasn't turkey hunting, but saw some elk, but lots of habitat that looks like it could hold birds. It's just going to be trying to, you know, find the bigger pieces of public to try. Pretty much all I haven't even looked at maps much yet. So we'll see how it goes.
Their season tends to run a little bit later in the year too, right?
Yeah. So I haven't looked at dates, but I would imagine it ends late May. We're going to go late April, early May time. So we might be a little bit early. I've been to some states in the early May, and you're early, you know, some of those states that go to late May, or like Michigan goes to June. I don't think you'd be early in Michigan if you were there in May, but still, some of those states just happen so late.
Yeah. What, if you could give people that wanted to travel a little bit and go shoot some redheads two or three tips on how to like pick a place without, if they don't, let's say the guy doesn't have buddies to hit up and say, hey, think there's turkeys here, do you know, or whatever, like as far as e-scouting and stuff like that, what kind of legwork or web work could a guy do? What are you looking for that you feel like gives you, you know, solid odds to start off?
So the very first thing is to stay mobile before you even, you know, have that in your brain, even if before you start e-scouting, know that you might have to jump around. That's why I like to stay in the vehicle. I don't like to be tied down to a hotel room you have to go back to every night. So that's one of the reasons I got my van. So
very, Chris, very intelligent.
In Alabama, it'll be a good thing. But yeah, as far as e-scouting's huge, of course. But being there, it's just kind of like when we went to Florida last year. Even when you show up and drive down the roads, you think, man, this is going to, you know, most of those WMAs down there are just tall pines. You're just, when you're on the road, you're like, I don't know about this. You have to get off the road, get towards some water, pretty much every state. Even if it's just big timber, turkeys have to have water. So I would say water and looking for terrain features that they can key in on. Get up to a high knoll to listen. That's what I like to do. Even if you don't think you'll hear anything that last hour, if you're not hunting, get on the highest spot you can get to and just sit there and listen. Mm-hmm. I like to hoot really loud. I don't care if it sounds like an owl or not. I hoot with my voice as loud as I can at dark, just to try to get something to gobble. But get high, get where you can hear into areas of water, especially out west. They're going to be roosted over a creek. I can almost guarantee it. And stay mobile for sure. Know that you might have to pick up your roots and go somewhere else. You might had a buddy last year that I was hunting with in New York, and he pulled up the roots and drove like 4 hours. We both killed turkeys the next day. I stayed where we were. He went somewhere else. So just know that you might have to move. Don't be stuck.
I like that. I think we found our title for the podcast.
Stay mobile.
Get high, get loud, and stay mobile.
I want to have a t-shirt that just says hoot louder, because I grew up, or I didn't grow up, but when I was learning to turkey hunt, it was a lot of, I mean, you don't stop until you hear one gobble, you know, on the roost. You're trying to cover as much ground as you can. I'm hooting as loud as I can. I'm not, you know, I know people think you're scaring birds or whatever, but trying to get to where I could find a bird. Of course, that was before populations have plummeted pretty much everywhere in the Southeast, but that was when you would hear, it didn't take very many hoots before you heard one. So it wasn't like you were just hooting at the top of your lungs 100 times every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now you would be if you were still trying to hear a turkey. I tell people all the time, one of the worst places I hunt is right here at home. A lot of these WMAs used to be great. You'd hear 3 or 4 every day. I might go, since I run my own business, I can pretty much go every morning and be back by 9 o'clock, 9:30. And sometimes I'll go all week without hearing a bird on the roost or even in the first hour of daylight. So
from your perspective, being in the Southeast, what do you believe has caused kind of population collapse down there? I mean, not complete collapse, but obviously there's a lot less birds in the Carolinas, in a lot of that area down there.
Yeah. I think it's definitely predators and habitat, a mixture of those two. A lot of the studies have shown the breeding dates with, you know, trying to start the harvest after all the breeding has taken place and all that. But my only personal issue with that is South Carolina already moved the season. Well, we moved it up and then we moved it back about 5 years ago, and it, you know, that didn't do anything. So now we're moving it again. Are they admitting that moving it the first time didn't work, so we did it again? That's my only problem with some of that. Harvest numbers aren't really, you know, a lot of states fluctuate a lot every year. So The biggest problem, though, is, you know, like I said, the predators and the habitat. But when you look at how many poults survive per hen, it's like a lot of states it's less than one. Like that's not good. I should have had that study pulled up. It wasn't MSU for you, Chris, but it was, and you know, it might've been, I can't remember what it was, but it had a lot of details of how many, you know, poults made it, how many average eggs got laid per hen, how many poults made it to, you know, a certain size. And it was pretty alarming. You know, I think to maintain populations, you need like 3 or 4 per hen, and it's well under 2 for sure. In a lot of states is less than 1. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I know a lot of guys that have decent sized properties and they've trapped hard and they've gotten their turkey populations back. So, it's definitely something that helps for sure. So I guess I don't think we'll ever have a definite answer.
Yeah. I feel habitat's got to be up there big time. Everybody's cutting everything down and mowing it, and everybody wants to clean out their woods and clean up the fence rows. And
yeah, where I hunted in Illinois last year for deer, they were coming in and wiping out all the trees that are in those ditches that run through the middle of fields and stuff. It's like for no real good reason.
Yeah.
And a lot of wildlife bed in that, even without the trees. I mean, you'll jump coyotes or deer out of it that, you know, if the trees were there, would just be a little bit more cover. They're just laying in the 2 and 3 foot tall weeds that are there.
Yeah.
I'd love to see like one of these universities do a full on study about predators and that kind of stuff. And specifically, Chris, you and I have talked about this. I would love to see correlations between raptor recovery and turkey populations and seriously look at the reality of like when they started really having a big boom in owl populations again and you know, hawks and that kind of stuff. Like I just always tend to wonder like how much that actually affects on it, as well as, you know, ground, like egg predators of ground nesting birds. Like it's gotta be, I gotta think that it's some level of correlation there.
Yeah. I also feel like you can kill all the predators you want, but it doesn't take many predators to kill a bunch of poults because they're little snack size suckers. And when you have a 10 acre field versus a 1,000 acre field, you know, just so much easier to key in on a hen, you know, on her nest. And
yep,
you got to get them hatched and you got to get them through the first couple weeks so they can fly up into the roost. But I wanted to bring something up. It's very encouraging that you say this about Just Hoot Louder, because I would go out with my buddy Pierce and we'd hunt together, and night before we'd do just like you said, go roost birds. And before I would never hear birds trying to roost them until I learned to just basically scream. And my buddy sounds way more realistic with his hoot owl call, his natural hoot owl call with his voice. It's not bad, but they always gobble at me because I'm louder. We kind of learned that together. And then, of course, the other cool part, which I'm sure you've done a million times, is you call in a breeding pair and then get them going. And then
if they hear you, they're coming. They're going to be right there, and then they're going to keep going. It's crazy. If you hear one and you hoot at them, they're on top of you in no time.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. But it is interesting that you hit that certain decibel level, pitch, whatever, and once you break that threshold, he'll gobble at you. Even if he's kind of tight-lipped that morning or that evening, sometimes you can get him to screw up and just accidentally react to it. So, well, dude, I'm freaking pumped, man. Good luck this weekend.
Absolutely, man.
Are you hunting all weekend or for longer than that?
Yeah, probably 4 days or so, and then coming home.
Okay.
Got some stuff to get done. It's like running the business takes a lot of time. It's a springtime business. That's one of the thing. It doesn't suck, but it does, because my busy time is when I want to be out turkey hunting. So
it's a cruel joke. Talking to these guys in these mobile companies, it's the same thing. You're like, hey, we should go to XYZ and we'll plan a hunt. You know, we'll meet up with, you know, name a company. And they're like, well, actually, and a lot of them are just stupid busy that time of year, so they end up wanting to go turkey hunting or something. Well, dude, if you're up in the Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio range, hit us up.
Opening weekend for Indiana.
What'd you say?
I said I will be opening weekend in Indiana.
Are you going up? Or no, I'm sorry, I screwed that up. That they're doing deer camp up there. So you're going opening weekend of Indiana?
Yeah, but I don't even know where I'm going or who I'm going with. But
all right, well, maybe.
I know a general area that camp is going to be, but it's going to be a surprise when I get there. I only know. Well, I just know one person. It's kind of like, well, it'd be kind of like Alabama deer camp. I pretty much only knew Jacob and then Andrew, who didn't even show up. So I met all you guys. So it'll be similar to that. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna head out that way in the next couple weekends. Probably not this weekend, but the next, and scout a little bit. Hopefully, I can hear some birds. And if you, I mean. If you're not going to have problems getting on birds. So that's a good place to go, but I won't say anymore.
I've been deer hunting up there for a few years on the public. So, and we see turkeys there. I know that a lot of times at home, just because they're there in the fall doesn't mean they're there in the spring. But yeah, I think that I could probably go back to some of those places if I needed to in the fall or in the spring. So.
Absolutely. Well, dude, we really appreciate you coming on. You want to tell everybody where they can find you as far as social media, website, all that?
Yeah, so we're not super active on, like, Instagram. I try to post every now and then, but you can find Meadow Creek Mounts on Facebook, Instagram. We try to post every now and then on there, and then meadowcreekmounts.com. You want to order something, we've got red dots, we've got the mounts, we've got ammo. So,
awesome, man.
What's up?
All right. Well, guys, we appreciate you tuning in. We're really grateful that you gave us your time tonight, Greg. If you haven't yet, go check out the Mobile Hunters Expo at themobilehuntersexpo.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And also, if you're into high-level deer and turkey content, go check out the Mobile Hunter Group on Facebook. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight, we've been hosted by Chris Leppert and Rick Cates, and we were joined by Greg Mayhair. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a good night.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.